It's ESPN BS. From Scouts Inc. Here's Jeremy Green.
Hello! And welcome to the first weekly edition of ESPN Football Today. Presented by ESPN. I'm your host, Jeremy Green. Pod Vader on the other side of the glass. And Pod Vader, I know it's not daily. I know it's not every day. No. It's weekly now. But I'm still fired up.
I saw that. What kind of fired up are you? Are you
I'm Obama fired up.
Are you fired up?
I'm a little bit Jim Moore fired up.
Fired up.
I'm a little bit Pete Carroll fired up.
I am so fired up.
I'm a little bit of everybody fired up because I'm just fired up to be here.
By the way, a listener sent us James Carville on Mike and Mike in the Morning.
What did he say?
He came on and said, I'm fired up. I'm all sorts of fired
no,
up.
No, he didn't.
He did.
Let's hear it.
And if you, well, I don't have it currently ready. I mean, if you want, I can start grabbing all that. I'm not so much down with all these fired ups.
Why?
Well, everyone says fired up.
It's the new theme song for JG.
I mean, they said fired up on the CBS pregame.
Yeah, but you know,
like a million times.
we should have probably we should have probably stamped it.
We should have trademarked it.
Well, absolutely.
You know that movie Fired Up about the...
Yeah, we should have stamped it.
That's now on demand.
You know
you
what?
Now watch that.
From now on, when you're on CBS or ABC or Fox or anybody and you say, I'm fired up, you need to say, I'm fired up, like JG. We should have trademarked it.
Interesting. We'd have to give Jim Mora a little cut.
He's
the one that brought it to
him. Yeah, he really did. Fired Up was the original. I'm pretty fired up today. It's our first weekly show. We're not going to go next week, though, right, Pod? We're going to take the week off.
Yeah, vacation, man.
Yeah, you're off next
week.
It's
been a long season.
It's been a long season. I'm going to take some time off next week and get healthy, even though I'm going to be in town. So we're not going to have a show next Thursday. We'll come back the following Thursday. And I guarantee you this, I will be.
Fired up.
Are you fired up?
I will be fired up, guaranteed.
That'll be the NFL Combine, by the way.
I really do. I need a week off. Everybody on Facebook's like, JG, take a week off. I was supposed to be in California this week. It didn't work out. It wasn't because of you, Pod Vader. It wasn't because of the podcast, because a couple other meetings. Things happened. I was expecting to be on the 18th hole probably right now. No, it's only 7 a.m. there. Probably be teeing it up right now. But I definitely need some rest and relaxation. You need some rest and relaxation. But we're going to do a podcast today, so let's kick it off with Seth Wickersham from ESPN The Magazine as we kick off our three-point stance.
This is the three-point stance. Point one.
I would now like to welcome in from ESPN The Magazine, Seth Wickersham. Seth, how are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm not driving around in a blizzard. Are you?
Well, the remnants of a blizzard. Fortunately, it passed.
And it wasn't really the blizzard that it was expected to be.
I'm sorry?
I said, and it wasn't really the blizzard that it was expected to be. I mean, I don't know about you. Southington, Connecticut was supposed to get 12 inches. We got 4.
Well, I live in the New York area, and I shoveled the driveway twice yesterday.
Oh!
So, lucky you.
So Seth was busy, and Seth was busy writing this piece that was on ESPN.com yesterday. He says, with the current labor negotiations, there is no good news for the players. What do you mean by that, Seth?
Well, I don't know how much in the show you've been talking about the uncapped year, but in March, on March 5th, if there isn't an extension to the collective bargaining agreement, we're going to go to a special set of rules that were originally implemented to avoid this specific thing and the situation that we're in. And, there's going to be severe restrictions on free agency. There's going to be severe restrictions on how much unrestricted free agents can get in raises. There's going to be a lot of people who thought, 212 players to be exact, who thought they were going to be unrestricted free agents, who are going to be restricted free agents, and essentially won't be able to cash in like they thought they'd be able to. And the way that it affects players is because on the other side of it, there's going to be an uncapped year.
Right.
And originally, the rules for the uncapped year were inserted to avoid as an incentive for the owners to reach an agreement, because they didn't want to become Major League Baseball, where you have a couple teams that are able to spend a lot of money and a lot of teams that can't. But because of the economy and because of profits aren't what a lot of owners want them to be, they're actually looking forward to the uncapped year because they can spend as little on payroll as they want and simply keep the money. And so a poison pill that was put in there that was supposed to be the player's biggest leverage is actually turned out to be a huge weapon for the owners. And that's why a lot of players just are going to have a really, really tough time, you know, the next year.
But without an uncapped year, aren't there a few players that could cash in on certain or in certain organizations? Dallas, Washington come to mind. The few.
There could be, you know, like Carlos Dansby is a guy who might be able to. But the main thing is that the owners just aren't in a spending mood, and they actually haven't been for a while. You know, last year Albert Haynesworth's deal with the Redskins was the only blockbuster free agency deal, and you know, I could see a team, you know, coming in and paying a lot of money for you know, a key player, but the notion that it's going to be this big spending spree is really, really wrong, because I don't think the teams are going to be spending a lot of money, because I simply don't think they have to, and I think they want to pad their profits.
An uncapped year to me means that we never go back to the salary cap again, though, Seth. So I guess my question, whereas you're saying nobody benefits this year, do the players eventually benefit with no uncapped year or no free agency or no salary cap? Do they eventually benefit? 2012?
They could, and I think that whether or not the cap comes back is a huge question, and I don't think anybody knows definitively what the answer is. I think that the hard thing for the players is, you know, here's going to be the indicators, basically, about, you know, that you can look for in the 2010 season to see whether or not a cap will be back. Number one, what team wins the Super Bowl? If it's a high payroll team like the Redskins or the Cowboys or the Jets or the Giants, it's a good thing for the players, because they can argue that there's a premium on their services and that talent equals wins, which equals more money, which gives them the incentive they need to argue that a cap shouldn't come back. And then the NFL really could become like Major League Baseball. But if a team like the Chargers, which is expected to have a payroll of like $95 million, which is going to be probably...
Though.
Exactly, but I'm saying is like they're probably going to be in the lower third, and you know, if a low payroll team that's below the salary floor at the moment wins the Super Bowl, it's a huge advantage for the owners, because how can players argue that they're underpaid if a low payroll team wins the championship?
I would agree with that, but they've got a lot of talent.
They do, and I think that's why they're in a good position, and that's another reason why I think that the players are just in a bind right now, because they just simply don't have a whole lot of leverage in this entire situation. The biggest piece of leverage they had was the uncapped year, and it's turned out to be a weapon for the owners.
I gotta agree. I don't know if you agree with this, but the Saints are in an uncapped year, if they're in an uncapped year, and they've got a lot of free agents. I don't know, man. They won a Super Bowl, but they got a lot of free agents.
Yeah, they do, and I think it's gonna, you know, they're gonna have to make some hard decisions, and you know, a guy like Reggie Bush, who I think is, you know, on the verge of making $8 million next year and really hasn't produced like they thought he would, you know, might look elsewhere. And I think that generally speaking across the league, you're going to see teams that made financial decisions that they wish they hadn't cut those players because they don't want to pay them. And without the salary cap, they don't have to worry about future cap penalties like they would, which is really frustrating for teams like the Eagles and the 49ers and the Vikings and teams that have managed their money well, because the uncapped year is essentially a bailout for teams that have made bad decisions.
If we don't have an uncapped year, no salary cap, do we ever see a salary cap again in the NFL, Seth?
I think so, because I think the owners have a lot of leverage, and I think that you know, if they lock out the players a year from now, you know, they're going to continue to get TV money, $1 billion from DirecTV that gets distributed around the league. They're going to have their savings from the uncapped year, and the players are going to realize that they're just getting older and their windows to make millions are shrinking. And so I think that you're going to see an agreement. If there's a lockout, if there's a work stoppage, I think you'll see an agreement, you know, probably in July before training camp, because the players simply can't afford to have, you know, all these seasons gone by without, you know, making the type of money that they can.
So even if there's a taste of no free agency, you think there will be free agency will come back?
Free agency, yeah, I do. And I think that the salary cap, you mean the salary cap, I think.
Right. I'm saying, yeah, if there's a taste of no salary cap, we can do whatever the hell we want. We can do whatever we want. There's no rules. There's no restrictions. If we ever hit that point, you're one that believes that we will get to that point again where there is a salary cap and free agency.
I think the odds are good because I think that the owners want it. I think that they want a year off right now without having to pay the players 60% of revenues. But I think that I think they want it. And I think that they're the ones who have a whole lot of leverage in this situation. So I think that they'll end up getting a lot of what they want.
I never want to see an uncapped year. I never want to see non-free agency in the NFL. I like the way it works right now. I hope we can get it figured out.
Yeah, me too. You know, I think that it works well right now, and I think that it's too bad for these players who got a good deal for the owners to just sort of come back and say, well, you know, we made a mistake, you know, the last collective bargaining agreement, we gave you too much, and now we want to take it away, when there are all these incentives that owners can use. You know, for new owners, they can even write off payroll as a tax expense. You know, there's all these loopholes that come with owning a team, and I just find it, you know, I think
the owners are never going to lose. The owners are never going to go broke, Seth. Never.
No, and it's right. And you know, they talk about annual revenue as a barometer. But the bottom line is, you know, the investment of their franchise from when they bought it and the appreciation of it is just sky high. And that's ultimately what it's about. And nobody can argue that NFL franchises are going down in value.
Seth,
and I think the salary cap helps that, and that's why another reason why I think the owners will want the salary cap.
Seth Wickersham, ESPN, the magazine, joined us today. His article went up yesterday on the salary cap. Nobody's winning. Nobody's winning right how it is right now. Seth, agreed.
Well, from a fan perspective, yes.
No, from your and my perspective.
I think the owners feel like that they're in a very strong position because I don't think that they're afraid of an uncapped year by any means, and so I think they feel like that if there's anything, the scales are sort of tipped in their favor because, again, they can control their payroll and they can control their profits that way.
Well, I hope the players win. I hope the owners win. I hope everybody wins. I hope the fans win. I hope, as a fan myself, it wins. I want whatever works for everybody to keep football the way it is because I love the National Football League. I love watching every Sunday. I love working on this podcast, and I love working on ESPN talking about NFL football. We hope it all works out. Seth, great stuff, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
I would now like to welcome in James Walker, ESPN.com, AFC North blogger. James, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How's it going? Happy off-season, by the way.
Yeah. Is it the off-season, really? Because we're doing a podcast today, so I didn't know it was the off-season, but I guess it's a little bit of the off-season. ESPN Football Day, we're going to run weekly here at ESPN. We're going to just be once a week, and we're going on Thursday this week. James, it's a little bit of a rough week because we were supposed to get a blizzard, and there was maybe 5 inches, but power got knocked out of my house. How about you?
Well, in Cleveland, we had about 15 inches of snow over the weekend. Yeah, but it wasn't quite the blizzard we had in the East Coast. But, you know, it was pretty bad. But that's kind of the bane of living in Cleveland.
James, what are you working on this week?
Well, I have an interesting story that I'm going to write today, actually. It's going to run today, is whether the AFC North is outdating itself. And, you know, the league, as everyone knows, is quickly heading in a direction opposite of what the AFC North believes in, and that's running the football and playing good defense. And if you look at the rule changes over the past several years, you could barely touch the quarterback without being flagged 15 yards. You can't touch the receivers. So it's obvious the NFL wants offense and high scoring. And, you know, considering the two teams in the Super Bowl, Colts and Saints were, you know, both number one seeds and clearly the best two teams in the league this year. So I look back at a lot of statistics of 2009, and I think this past year was really the start of the AFC North getting left behind if the division doesn't adjust some of those philosophies. And I think they will.
Well, but you know what? I don't know that. I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but I mean, we've been begging for Pittsburgh to run the ball more than they're running. Is Pittsburgh outdated? I think they throw it more than they should.
Yeah, and that's a great counter argument. I'm glad you brought Pittsburgh up because, you know, they won the Super Bowl in 2008, so that's the first thing that people are going to say is, well, Pittsburgh, you know, won the Super Bowl a year ago. But like you said, if you really watch the Steelers closely for, say, the past year and a half, maybe 2 years, they've really become a primarily a passing football team, and they didn't win a Super Bowl running the football against the Arizona Cardinals. A lot of people are going to say, well, they had the number one defense 2 years ago, but they needed Ben Roethlisberger's arm in that game, particularly in the second half and the final drive when the defense couldn't keep up. So if you look at this year, they had a 4,000-yard quarterback. They had 1,000-yard receivers, and I studied those statistics. They actually passed the ball almost 58% of the time under Bruce Arians. So I think they've been kind of ahead of the curve going towards that. But this isn't, I think looking forward, this isn't going to be a league anymore where you could win a Super Bowl with Jeff Hostetler or Trent Dilfer or Brad Johnson, if you name some of the, you know, the average to below average quarterbacks that won a Super Bowl. I really think we're starting to get into an era now where you're going to need a Drew Brees or a Peyton Manning or a Ben Roethlisberger who won a couple years ago, or Tom Brady going forward. I really think it's going to be incredibly hard to win a Super Bowl strictly running the football and playing the defense from here on out.
Can you win a Super Bowl with Carson Palmer? I don't know. He's not elite to me anymore. He's still very good. Can you win a Super Bowl with him?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think Carson Palmer is kind of in that category of Eli Manning, let's say, who's, you know, an above-average quarterback that may not be a top-five quarterback. I don't necessarily think you need a top, you know, five or a top-three quarterback to win a Super Bowl, but I think, you know, you're going to need somebody that's in that upper half from this point on with the way the rule changes are now. You're going to need to score points and things like that. Now, can Carson Palmer win a Super Bowl? If you want to, you know, put him in an individual case where there's a lot of things going against him. One, he plays for the Bengals, which is not an organization that necessarily is the best in terms of personnel moves and things like that. They had a great year this year, but, you know, they're lacking receivers and things like that. I think, you know, breaking it down to an individual case is hard, but in terms of quarterbacks, the type of quarterback that you need, I think you're going to need a franchise quarterback, if not, you know, not necessarily a top five quarterback, but I think you're going to need one of the better quarterbacks, to have one of the better quarterbacks in the league to win a Super Bowl.
Where do we see the Baltimore Ravens? If they unleash Joe Flacco, is he good enough to win a Super Bowl for your team, or do we have to manage him enough that he needs a running game to go with it?
You know, I'm pretty high on Joe Flacco. I think he has all the physical tools, can make all the throws. Now, I think he has a good mental makeup where things just aren't too big for him. Now, 2 years in, it's kind of hard to say, you know, what his potential is. I think potentially he could be a franchise quarterback that could lead a team to the Super Bowl. I know that's a big statement, but right now, you know, he hasn't had any real franchise, you know, number one threats, legitimate number one threats at receiver to really show what he can do.
Right.
So I think with him growing, learning under Jim Zorn, I think it's going to help him a lot. Next year is going to be big for him. And if, you know, the Ravens could get a receiver, some people are saying Malcolm Floyd, some people are mentioning, you know, Vincent Jackson or Brandon Marshall. I don't know, you know, what receivers they're going to land, but I think they're going to have a better receiving core moving forward. And I think that's going to help Joe Flacco a lot.
So he can do it, but they've got to let him do it.
Yeah, I
think in your mind, he's good enough to do it, but take the cuffs off and let him do it.
Yeah, I think without a doubt, Joe Flacco, the physical tools and the mental makeup that he has will allow him to be one of the upper echelon quarterbacks. But, you know, I think philosophically, you know, the Ravens are a, you know, run-first team that primarily plays defense. Now, they started out the year first, you know, I'd say five or six games, they started out the year passing, and people were mentioning Joe Flacco in terms of the MVP race really early. That was really early in the season, and then that obviously died down. But yeah, I think Joe Flacco does have the physical ability to be one of the better quarterbacks in the league.
How far are the Browns away from in this mix when you talk about the AFC North? I mean, again, they don't even know what settle at quarterback. How far are they away?
Wow, I think the Browns are very far, but I think they have a chance to make up in the offseason. They were actually the team in the AFC North that ran the football the most. You know, they had some quarterback issues with Brady Quinn, Derek Anderson. They went back and forth between guys. So they ended up running the football more than any team in the AFC North. And not coincidentally, in my opinion, they finished with the worst record in the division by running the football the most. But I think they are far away. You know, coming out of the basement, I really think Mike Holmgren is going to make a difference. He knows football. He knows, you know, what a good player, what a successful team looks like. But, you know, the Steelers and Ravens are not organizations that make a lot of mistakes in terms of personnel. And, you know, I think, you know, it's going to be really hard for them, for the Browns to really make up ground with those teams. And with the Bengals hot right now, you don't necessarily know if the Bengals are here to stay or not, but, you know, right now they have a pretty good young core. They're one of the younger teams in the league. So I think the Bengals will, you know, will at least have a good 2010 as well. So it's not going to be an easy road for the Browns, but I think Mike Holmgren is going to have them headed in the right direction.
When you talk about what happened this year with Indianapolis and New Orleans both making it in the championship games, James, which teams or team in the AFC North is the closest?
Well, to the Colts, well, you know,
to the new football. To what we're talking about, when you got to throw the ball, you got to be effective throwing the ball. It's not all about the running game. I mean, which team's closest in the AFC North?
Yeah, well, the Steelers sort of got a head start against the rest of those teams because I think they've really been headed in that direction as far as being a pass-first team for the past year and a half, maybe 2 years or so. And you know, Ben Roethlisberger is the best quarterback in the division. I think that helps. I think they actually have one of the best receiving cores in the league. Very underrated. A lot of people, when they think of receiving cores from top to bottom, don't necessarily think of Hines Ward, Santonio Holmes, and Mike, the emergence of Mike Wallace. But I think they have the personnel right now to really, you know, thrive in the type of league that the NFL is going towards, where, you know, if they can improve in the red zone, I think that's one thing that they struggle with. They'll be able to put up a lot of points, but they can accumulate yards pretty quickly and a lot, you know, more than what a lot of people remember the Steelers when they were sort of a ground and pound team.
Who's further ahead, Cincinnati or Baltimore, going into 2010?
Between Cincinnati and Baltimore, I would say Cincinnati, because you know, Cincinnati sort of reverted back to, they kind of went opposite when they were you know, throwing the ball around. Carson Palmer was throwing for 4,000 yards. That's how they made the playoffs previously, but this year they made the playoffs pretty much by putting the handcuffs on Carson Palmer and running the football. I think some of that was personnel. You know, I think some of that was, you know, the lack of receivers and things like that outside of Chad Ochocinco. But I think philosophically the Bengals actually believe in a lot of the old school principles that we're talking about with running the football and playing good defense. And I think that's why they weren't even though they won the division, you know, I don't think, you know, they were within even a sniff of winning the Super Bowl this year.
That was AFC North blogger, ESPN.com blogger James Walker. Is the AFC North division built on defense running the ball? Have they changed? I think we've agreed they changed. I think Pittsburgh's changed that a little bit. They're still going to stop the run. But I think we've established that Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cincinnati have established that they've got to do a little bit more. No, James?
No, I agree. And I think you're going to see that in free agency in the draft, where, you know, Baltimore's going to be looking at receivers. The Bengals are going to be looking at receivers. The Browns are searching for a quarterback. I mean, this is all offense that they're going to be looking for and spending a lot of money on in a division that's known for defense. So I think this offseason is really going to sort of show what we've learned from the 2009 season. And that's that, you know, high scoring offenses and, you know, elite quarterback play is what's going to win in this league moving forward.
All right, James Walker, AFC North blogger from ESPN.com. James, great stuff, man. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Anytime, Jeremy.
Quick slants.
Putting the quick slants at the end.
Not the quick slants.
The quick slant.
I thought we were done.
Oh, here we go again. Thought you were done. Colts president Bill Polian puts blame on the offensive line and special teams, according to Colts.com, for losing the Super Bowl.
Come on. There should be no blame given, really. I don't need to put any blame on anywhere. I think the Saints were the better team that Sunday. I don't think there's going to be any blame given out. I really don't. I know a lot of people want to blame the coaches or blame this or the coach staff. I don't really think blame needs to be given out. I really don't. Yeah. They got beat by a better team that day.
Maybe Peyton Manning.
Well.
Or Reggie Wayne.
Well, he didn't blame him. Right. If he did, that would be exciting news. I guarantee you this. Any blame that goes on this game will not go on Peyton Manning, period.
No, it won't. Quick slants. According to ProFootballTalk.com, the Lions are interested in Dante Stallworth.
Good. They should add him. I mean, they need players. They need guys who can make plays, and Dante Stallworth can.
Quick slants.
Michael Vick says he could have done more while he was a quarterback with the Falcons. In an interview with 790 The Zone in Atlanta, he said that he was lazy and settled for mediocrity.
We got news or notes or sound?
No, no. We can't. Well, we have sound, but we as a podcast are not allowed to play it.
Well, you know what? He could have done more, obviously. I mean, he could have done a lot more to make himself a better player. Could have been a student of the game, a bigger student of the game. Could have done a lot of things. Probably could have been the first guy in, the last guy out. He wasn't that when he was in Atlanta. And now I think he understands what he's got to do to be a starting quarterback in the NFL if he wants to be that.
Yes, I would agree. And I would say this about that.
I'm going to say this about that.
Upon listening to this interview, he sounds very much like Tony Dungy.
Well, I haven't heard
which would make sense since Tony Dungy's been working.
I've heard the interview, but I mean, I think we all think that Michael Vick could have been a better quarterback in Atlanta. I think we all felt like Michael Vick resulted to being the best athlete, the best talent, and I don't think anybody felt like he did all he could do to be the best quarterback that he could be.
But I think it's also refreshing in this day and age where you hear a player take that sort of responsibility upon himself.
Well, it's always good.
You know, and it's different because he spent a year in jail for things that he did, which he's sorry for and wants to speak at the rookie symposium that they have every year.
Well, he's at rock bottom.
you know.
He's hit rock bottom.
But wouldn't it be nice to hear, like, Jamarcus Russell say something similar?
He hasn't hit rock
bottom
yet.
Maybe Vince Young.
They haven't hit rock bottom yet. Mm. Got to hit rock bottom before you can bounce back.
Quick slants.
The Redskins, according to FoxSports.com, are interviewing Bill Romanowski for their strength and conditioning job. Does this worry you at all, Mr. Supplement?
It worries me a lot. Mm. I mean, you're going to have a guy that's been that, whose results on supplements and steroids and admitted it, to be your strength and conditioning coach? Seriously? That worries me a ton. Mm. I would hope. Does it worry you?
Well, it raises an eyebrow for me.
Would you want to be the strength and conditioning coach of the Patriots? No.
Probably not.
No, I mean, that's going to worry any team.
Quick slants.
From 610 The Fan in Charlotte, Julius Peppers does not want a long-term deal with the Panthers.
He wants out. Good. They don't want a long-term deal either. So it's pretty much mutual. So right now, it's a matter of fact, can they trade him? Should they franchise him and trade him? Should they just cut him loose? I would franchise him again, see if I can trade him. Try to get some value.
Quick slants.
The Raiders hire former Chiefs defensive coordinator Clancy Pendergast.
I knew that.
Initial reports said that his position was unknown. Adam Schefter saying it's as the DB coach.
I knew that. It's a good thing. Glad that Clancy's back in the league. Again, I think he got a bad deal in Arizona. I think they could have used him in Arizona, actually, this postseason, but I'm glad to see him bouncing back. I mean, he went to Kansas City, didn't work. They've got their own ideas. They're going to bring in a lot of New England guys. Coach Haley has no say of whatever's going with the staff, and I mean Clint Spendergast is out, but I think he'll be a good addition to the Oakland Raiders. He's got great defense backs to work with there.
You make his job real easy.
No, I'm just saying you don't want to be a backup. You don't want to be a guy that went from a defense coordinator being a backup or being a deep. And I know you're in Oakland, and it's you're in no man's land. You got a great secondary to work with there in Oakland.
Quick slants.
And according to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Rams have been sold to Illinois businessman Shahid Khan.
Do we know what his intentions are?
He's a lifelong Champaign, Illinois guy.
All right.
So I doubt he would move them from St. Louis.
That's good.
It would seem unlikely.
All right. That's a good thing. I'm not familiar with this guy, and so I'd say if the team could stay in St. Louis and be productive, I'm all for it.
So there's your quick slants. They were quick. They were so quick, in fact, I think we're going to give people an extra point now.
Oh!
Your emails with your questions.
Computer, any messages for me?
The Audibles.
First message.
Throwing a curveball me, 4-point stance?
Yeah, well, you know, I send this email to you early in the morning, so it shouldn't be that much of a surprise. Although you did come from a hotel, so you never know.
There you go.
This one comes to us from Dan saying, I hope you can answer a quick question for me, although his email was not very quick at all. During the Super Bowl, I was noticing that Manning was doing his usual talk at the line, which I've heard in the past that a lot of what he says is just gibberish to confuse the defense, but on at least two occasions he audibled out of shotgun, went under center, both plays went to a die for significant at least 7 yards. He also had several plays where he felt pressure and managed to make some throws off his back foot to avoid being sacked. I understand that you can't take away his interception, but I would think that there should be more talk about what a great job he'd done up until that point. I'm not an Indy homer, far from it, Seahawks-Patriots fan. It's an interesting combo. But I felt as though I was watching a quarterback clinic when he was on the field, well, really for the whole game, but Breeze has a different style. So that was a long way of asking, why can't we talk about how great of a game it was and that Manning, even in defeat, showed why he's considered one of the best to play the position, just not as good as Brady when it matters.
But he's always going to do that. I mean, he's always going to make a lot of change on the line of scrimmage. He's always going to change from run to pass or pass to run based on what he sees. I mean, that's what he does. He's a great student of the game. There's nobody better than Peyton Manning in game. He makes great line calls. He makes great changes at the line of scrimmage. He gets his team out of good plays. It should be bad plays or bad plays turn into good plays. There's no question about that. I've never questioned Peyton Manning in game, his changes.
But
When
it comes to the big game, fair or not, he tends to have that one mistake that
and maybe
puts the game in the opposite direction.
And Pod, maybe that's because he does too much. Maybe he's doing too much.
Perhaps.
Maybe he's trying to do too much of the line of scrimmage. Maybe he's trying to make too many changes.
And it's going
to
be interesting to see this year when he's without Tom Moore, because Tom Moore's retiring.
Right. And maybe he's trying to do too much. And maybe too much is not enough. Or maybe too much is too much. It's hard to say. I can't question Peyton for making changes to the line of scrimmage, because I don't know what they're changing to. I know he gets him in a lot of good plays, and maybe at times he gets him into bad plays, and you mentioned it. Tom Moore's going to be a big factor. We'll see what happens next year.
That's why I brought it up with Manning. And of course, I have my own evil reasons. But at the same token, it is statistically shown. He's 9 of 9. His record in the postseason is not good.
You won't get a question from me on that.
Courtney in Indy says, I'll start this email saying that I'm a diehard Colts fan, diehard Colts homer. That being said, I also have the ability to congratulate the other team for an outstanding win, unlike some who don't remember Super Bowl 42. I will watch all the coverage and listen to all the podcasts on how the Saints were the better team, and I'll admit, if they were, doesn't mean this loss doesn't sting like hell, but there is always next year. Unlike some fans, Pats fans, Colts fans, don't believe in a sense of entitlement like we're there and we're destined to win or deserve to win because we have number 18. Even in loss, we always remember Super Bowl 44, in Jay's case, Super Bowl 43. It's been a great year listening to you two every day. Can't wait until next season, seeing as how after next year the podcast could be called Arena Football Today, Canadian Football Today, or even UFL Today. Either way, I'll listen because I can't get enough pigskin. Thanks for the great year. Listen, Courtney.
That's on to you. I hope you were going to step up.
Listen, Courtney.
That email went to me.
There's a difference between being 18-1 and 19-0 and being the Colts and losing this year. There's a huge difference. And whatever. Super Bowl 42 never happened. That's all I have to say about that.
I don't know. That's not to me.
And plus, it's a joke. I mean, seriously. I've already referenced Super Bowl 42 enough. Jose from Atlanta/Pittsburgh. Another interesting combo of towns to be from. Is it feasible that the UFL could, quote, hold on for one more day, and by day I mean year, to snatch up the myriad of players out of a job if, in fact, there's an NFL lockout? Could there be a colossal change of power in the football leagues that this country recognizes? Have the owners considered this danger? The NFL is the best football show in town, but it ain't the only one, and MIF players might be more than happy to play for something rather than not playing for nothing and really stick it to the NFL owners. Would this be illegal for the players, being that they are part of the NFL Players Union, and do you think the UFL has the cash and the stones to pull this off?
They got the cash. I don't think they have the stones.
I think they got the stones.
They got the stones. I mean, they got the cash, they got the stones, but I don't think it can work out.
Timing is everything, though. If the NFL does go into a severe lockout, could we see players? Hey, UFL, I'm out of a job. I'll play.
You could try. It's still about the NFL to me. Man, I'm always going to support the NFL. I'm always going to say that's the show. And my dad works in the UFL. So you're hearing from a guy whose dad has a stake in the UFL, and I still think the NFL is the only game.
Well, it is right now. NFL locks out. I don't see why players can't just jump ship and play for the UFL.
They could, and I don't think it'll matter.
You'll need more than four teams.
You'll need more than four teams. You'll need a lot more ownership value. You'll need a lot more determination than this is the money that we have, and this is all we're going to spend, and there's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts to go with that, but I really hope the NFL is the game.
I would, too. But timing is everything, and if the UFL can hold out one more season.
If I can hold out and say Jeremy Green from the UFL, and that's my year in contract, I got a lot of years left on my deal. Whatever I got to do.
This one comes to us from Jonathan. Says, this is Jonathan here wondering, what do you see as the immediate needs for the Vikings in free agency or the draft? For me, it would be a quarterback first, and then more strong safety, and finally a defensive tackle, since Pat Williams' retirement might happen. P.S. Max, I'm coming for you again.
Well, I mean, again, I don't know what's going to happen with the Vikings tonight. You know, if Brett Favre's back, quarterback's not the issue. If he doesn't come back.
Well, you still need a quarterback to groom, unless you're believing in Tavares Jackson.
Well, I mean, they're a playoff team with Tavares Jackson or Sage Rosenfeld, so just that my first need? No, I think they got to upgrade the back end. I think they've got to be better. They've got to be more consistent wide receiver. I think the offensive line needs to be more consistent. I mean, I don't know. If Brett Favre comes back, I will tell you this. The Vikings are a favorite to win the NFC, and they're a favorite to be in the Super Bowl. So.
Aaron in Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska, to be more specific. Any chance of Dante Stallworth returning to the Pats as a receiver? With Welker out a few months in the next season, the Pats are pretty thin when it comes to the receiving core. No chance.
No?
I don't think so.
Either. I think they moved on.
Bob Kraft is the kind of guy that won't bring in these type of players.
I think it's an opportunity, but I don't think it's new.
I don't want to lump Dante into these type of players, but Dante's got a mark now that will make Robert Kraft not bring him back.
I don't think he's there.
Plus, I don't think they would have brought him back anyway.
Not there.
This one comes to us from Steve. Dude, I can't believe I heard you questioning whether or not Emmitt Smith is a first ballot lock for the Hall of Fame.
I don't question anybody.
He's addressing me.
Chris Carter's not a lock, so.
Just out of curiosity, what does a guy need to do besides becoming the leading rusher in NFL history for yards and touchdowns to become a first ballot lock, in your opinion? By the way, since Emmitt Smith is a first ballot Hall of Famer, the point is moot. My whole thing was, one, knowing how this group of voters tend to work.
Yep.
It was questionable.
Yep.
Because to me, Emmitt Smith, while he's the leading rusher, he's a compiler. He stayed in the league longer than perhaps he probably should have. Okay. And while I think he's very good, and certainly a Hall of Famer, I just didn't see him on the same level as like Jerry Rice, who's arguably the greatest player in the
My thing with first ballot Hall of Famers was when Chris Carter didn't become a first ballot Hall of Famer, now we're in year three. I can't lock anybody anymore. I refuse. Refuse to make that mistake of locking anybody in.
Well, see, and there's your answer, Steve. Yep. And by the way, next year's another interesting group of players.
Who do we got?
Like Deion Sanders, I believe, will be eligible.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Right. But he will be.
Nope.
You don't think Deion Sanders in the Hall of Fame next year?
God, if Chris Carter's not first ballot, I don't think Deion should be.
Well, see, there you have it.
It's me.
Jim in Pennsylvania. How do they decide who plays in the NFL kickoff game for next season? I know it will include the Saints, and it'll be in New Orleans, but how do they choose the opponent? Reason I ask is because I'm a Steelers fan. Steelers play the Saints division next year. Wouldn't it make sense to have this game be a matchup between the last two Super Bowl champs? Last game between these two in 2006 was somewhat of an epic battle. Love to see it again. Talk to the commission for me, JG. That's certainly going to be in consideration.
Yeah, I think they lock it in, try to get a team that's going to have a player that's going to be in the game. I mean, that usually helps, right?
Yeah, they usually try to make that first game somewhat competitive. Although they do like to try and favor the home team.
I don't know.
I know the Patriots played the Raiders one year in the kickoff, which clearly was not.
I don't have an answer. I know you'd like to have a team in the game who has a player that's getting inducted. I mean, that would be helpful.
So. Well, no, this would be the kickoff. Do you think they want somebody that's in the Hall of Fame, too?
Oh, I thought you meant
Hall of Fame game.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't even know how they choose which two teams are going to be in the Hall of Fame game.
Well, you'd hope that they would choose a Hall of Fame game based on a team that's going to have a player inducted, correct?
Right. So you're looking at the 49ers Cowboys? There's no way they're putting the 49ers Cowboys in the Hall of Fame game.
You're saying I need hope. ESPN Football Today presented by ESPN. I'm your host, Jeremy Green. Pod Vader on the other side of the glass. Our first weekly podcast of the year. Pod, no podcast next week. Let's take the week off. You're out of town. I need to get healthy. So I think we just decided we're going to take the week off next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Football Today, ESPN, or ESPN Football Today presented by ESPN. We'll be back. It will be weekly. Your thoughts will be counted. Football Today at ESPNradio.com. Get them in. I hope you all enjoyed the podcast. I know everybody was begging to get a podcast in this week. You got it. ESPN Football Today presented by me, Jeremy Green, Pod on the Side of the Glass. Everyone, hope you have a great Thursday. We're out of here. See ya!
The music provided on today's show is from Mevio's Music Alley, Will Chryski's Metal Mayhem. Check it out at music.mevio.com. For more football talk, be sure to check out Football Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNradio.com.